Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Today we visit with Liz Freemuth. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business. She calls her business the Garden Hole, and it's a lot of fun to visit with her. She gets to travel. She has clients all over the country that she deals with, but she's based right here in Wisconsin, and we'll talk with her about bringing plants inside for the winter. We'll talk about evergreens, but she's got some unusual plants she wants to talk about, too, that she brought with her from, not to the studio, but to her home from Georgia. And we'll talk about that, too. And, of course, we are ready to answer your questions, comments. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And, Liz, welcome back.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Larry. It's always a pleasure to get the invite.
Well, it's fun to have you here. And you did some purchasing.
I did. I'm kind of bad when it comes to going to garden centers because I'll buy stuff that has no hope of living outside in Wisconsin. And especially if I've got my car, if I'm traveling to do some planting, I can put things in the car. So last week when I was in Georgia, I brought back a camellia plant, a nice 5-foot camellia plant, to see if I can get that to grow. I mean, they're so beautiful. It's not a tea plant. It's not Camellia sinensis, but it is absolutely gorgeous. It should have, in theory, if they open, it should have 5 to 6 inch deep red, purple, well, reddish maroon blooms on it. And so it should be gorgeous. And that's a winter bloomer. So it should be January or February. So I'm really looking forward to that one. And blue ginger and tree ivy and gardenia, big leaf gardenias that are nice 3-foot shrubs. I brought those back too. So they're residing in my kitchen.
And that's where will they stay? Will
they actually, I've got a corner. I have got a corner in the kitchen that we've got grow lights on if we need to supply a little bit extra light. You know, we've got catch basins so that they're not going to be in standing water and they get the humidity that they need for over winter. And light can be, again, augmented with the growing lights, but it's got good southern exposure. So it's almost a perfect environment. So it'll be fun.
You were telling me also about a finger lime you call
it? Oh, finger lime. I mean, citrus are some of my absolute favorites for bringing into the house, especially this far north, where we can take them outside during this late spring, summer, and into fall. They'll take really low temperatures. They'll take down into the 30s easily and even into the high 20s. So, you know, they can get a pretty long season outside, but then you bring them in and they do absolutely fantastically. And finger lime is originally from Australia, and the limes are actually shaped like fingers, and they sort of look, you know, per the season, dead man's fingers. They can be kind of blackish in color once they start getting ripe. And there's little capsules of lime on the inside in it. They're just wonderful. Called lime caviar or citrus caviar, depending on, you know, what the flavor is, because that will vary slightly from sweet to sour. An unfriendly plant, but it's got thorns on it, but it's absolutely fantastic. Wonderful, wonderful
plant.
Well,
would it be a good companion for my limey?
Limey would live very happily with that. The other one that would live very happily with limey is a Satsuma tangerine. Satsumas are my favorite cultivar of tangerine to take in and out of doors. It's very low on the problem scale. They're virtually nothing for seeds on the inside of the Satsumas, and they will hang on the tree for a very long time. You know, really, you can pick them as you need them. With citrus, you don't have to pick them all. You just pick what you need as they're ripe, and you're good to go. But the Satsuma is fantastic.
Well, maybe a Satsuma and a finger lime to join Limey.
I think that would be fantastic, yeah.
Limey hasn't been feeling too well lately.
Oh, well, did Limey go outside?
Limey's outside, yeah. Okay. Limey's still outside, as a matter of fact, but she's not looking as good as...
Have you been fertilizing?
I have, but I haven't for a while now, so I probably need to get some... I usually use kind of a fish...
a fish emulsion,
emulsion
sort of thing.
Fertilizer?
You might actually want to invest in, and you can order it online unless one of the local, you know, if a local garden center will order it for you, you can get it from them. But a good citrus fertilizer, because mm-hmm. often what we tend to forget about in this part of the country is the pH of our water. And so when we bring things in, we can really throw them off by not acidifying, even checking the pH of your water to see if you need to acidify your water once you bring them in. And that's the case with a lot of the house plants. You know, we're looking at tropical plants and things from down south that actually need lower pH than what we give them. And so we need to kind of check on that as well.
So for other kinds of plants, the same, you need to look for fertilizers that are sort of specific to the plant if you can.
Absolutely. Absolutely. To me, that is the best way to do it. You know, for my camellia, it's getting azalea and rhododendron fertilizer. That's what's recommended by the Camellia Association, and that's what it gets. And you have to monitor how much it needs at different times of the year, no matter what that plant is. The camellia, because it blooms in middle of winter, it actually needs fertilizer now and then through the time it blooms. For the citrus, often they don't need it except for once every month, 2 months, because they're semi-dormant right now. And so you don't want to push them too far. And especially when you're moving them in and out of doors, you don't want to push growth too far with over-fertilizing. And often what's recommended for indoor, moving those plants indoor, is to use a good slow-release fertilizer that's specific for your plant and put that over the top surface of the soil so that you're not shocking it too much and let it get a nice slow release. But again, you have to kind of watch what does the plant need at what time of the year.
Yeah. You still have your tomato plants out, by the way?
No, they're all hanging upside down. How about you? I mean, they should about done, aren't they?
I still have a couple out there. And I've got a pepper plant that's just going crazy in my straw bale. I mean, I must have 10 peppers on that plant yet.
And is it still looking pretty good?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know at a couple of clients' places, the peppers have been looking fantastic yet, so we leave them out and just let them go. And, you know, if you want your pepper to go a little bit further, you might even think about tenting it as we get into some kind of colder temps towards the end of the month. Be nice to have homegrown peppers for Thanksgiving, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I'm betting that I will. Liz Freemuth, our guest today. And we got open lines here. You can join in with your own questions, comments, or experiences to share of a garden nature or a tree nature. I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. Love to hear from you. Should you, let's talk about evergreens for a minute. Should you wrap evergreens?
You know, there's a couple of schools of thought on that. What do you wrap evergreens or not? And if you're planting zone appropriate evergreens, you really should not have to wrap them. If you're pushing that zone a little bit and you feel that they need a little bit of extra protection, then you can put burlap up. But notice I said up, not wrap. Because when you put cloth next to a leaf and the air is dry, that cloth, burlap, is going to actually pull moisture out of that evergreen leaf.
Oh.
So, you know, it acts like a wick. And if there's available moisture in that leaf, it's going to move toward that dry burlap. And so if you need to wrap them, don't wrap them right against the leaf tissue or the stems, the trunk, anything like that. Give it a little bit of space, because you really don't want that whipping in the wind and abrading the leaves or abrading the branches either. So you do have to be a little bit careful about that.
Yeah, if it's kind of loose and then it gets wet and then it freezes and then it's kind of like hammering.
Yeah, hammering with a big ice cube. Yeah, so you really do want to kind of pay attention to what it is you're trying to do. So if you're trying to maintain moisture, then you don't want to put something against it that's going to suck the moisture out. It's the same thing with desiccants. A lot of people say, you know, use desiccants. And what that does is it prevents the moisture from coming out of the leaf over winter. And if there's not enough moisture in that plant system, you still are going to lose moisture.
Yeah.
And so the biggest thing people can do for their evergreens is get water on those right up until hard freeze.
Yeah.
And that is the biggest thing you can do for your evergreens at this time of the year.
For some reason, people don't want to do that, leave their hoses out.
I think they're afraid of freezing.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand that, but you know, what's the the cost of draining your hose or unhooking it from the outdoor faucet as opposed to replacing a huge tree.
Yeah.
You know, it's thousands of dollars. You've got value of thousands of dollars in those trees. So it's kind of worth it to water them.
Well, Janie in Wisconsin Rapids has something for us. So let's go there. Hi, Janie.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. Love your show as usual. The gardening shows are great. I'm curious about the red bushes that are just kind of a flame right now. Is that called a burning bush?
It really depends on what you're looking at, but more than likely, yes, it's going to be the euonymus or the burning bush.
Burning bush.
Yeah. Sumac also, it depends on the size of the leaves and the form. If it's along side of the road on the hillsides, often that's sumac.
So this is in different gardens. And
oh, yeah, that's euonymus. Yeah, that's going to be euonymus burning bush. Amelanchiers are really quite stunning right now, but they're more of an orange color, the ones that I have in my yard, rather than a red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Yeah, You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Dwayne in Wausau, on to you now. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi, yeah, we had a burning bush in Iowa, and it was awesome. But, okay, I have a big, tall spruce, not a blue spruce, but it's really getting thin. The needles have been dumping off all summer, and it's kind of going up the tree. There's still some green needles, but is it a fungus? And then I want to replace it, a tree near that, like a maple. There's one maple that stays kind of, the leaves turn really beautiful orangey-red in the fall, like a Henry maple or a fair, I forget, some guy said the name of it. But, and also single root and ball root tree. What's a single root?
Single root tree and a ball root tree. I don't know what you're talking about with a single root tree.
It's just one root that you plant with
a bare root.
Oh, a bare root. Okay, there we go. Now I got it. Bare root you will do in the spring, generally.
Okay,
What the growers do is they harvest those and keep them cool and moist so that in the spring, early in the spring, they can either be sold to other growers to grow them out in containers, pop them in the ground, or we as savvy consumers can get them and get them in the ground and have pretty good luck with doing bare root in the spring. Ball and burlap are the ones that you see with the burlap around them, and those are field dug trees, shrubs, what have you, whatever size and whatever species you're getting. And those are dug and then balled and burlapped and set aside for people to buy. Generally, they've got pretty good root systems on them. When they do those in the field, they root prune so that you've got nice hair roots coming so that you get good growth right off the bat. With any of these things you put in the ground, when I say good growth, that's going to take a good 4 years for you to really start to notice some height and width growth on your plants just because it takes that long for them to go. Bald and burlap are dug at specific times, which are good for those specific species. So they're generally pretty good, but heavy. That's one of the things that if you're trying to do that on your own, those can sometimes weigh a good couple hundred pounds. And
that ship has sailed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either that or get yourself some sturdy utes to help you out. Containerized plants are fantastic. Also, those generally you can get any time of the growing season, even into fall a little bit. But those are going to be a little bit more manageable for most homeowners. As far as the spruce goes, the spruce, if it's thinning out, my suggestion to you, because there could be a number, two or three things are probably going to be what you're looking at, and more than likely a needle fungus of some sort. My suggestion would be to send a sample into either your extension office, where are you calling from, Wausau? Your extension office up there, or send one to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Lab here at UW-Madison. And Brian's got a wonderful website. It's PDDC. Oh, yeah, take a look at it. It'll tell you how to take samples, but also it will give you some pictures to look at as to what problems will look like as they develop on the trees. And you may actually recognize some of the visual symptoms as similar to what yours are. So that will help you take a sample. If it's,
like it's going up the tree, the top 10 feet looks real thick and green yet, but it's been just moving up.
Yeah, and the other thing I would suggest is, do you work with an arborist at all?
No, I have not had.
Okay. Sometimes it's of benefit to you to develop a relationship with an arborist in the area so that when you have problems like this, you can give them a call and they can often catch them earlier if you've got an ongoing relationship. You know, have them stop once a year, once every 2 years to check and see how your trees and shrubs are doing to see if you do need to catch something before it gets out of hand. Once a needle fungal issue starts to move up the tree, you may not be successful in treating. So it's, I would get a sample into Brian, and you need live and dead tissue. I know that for sure. So you may have to get a ladder out and do it safely.
Okay, thank you.
And again, it's the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and just go online. I think we have a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show as well. And
he does a fabulous job.
Yeah,
he turns it around very, very quickly. Maple suggestion, you know what, there's so many out there that you have to pick something that's good for your site and situation. So height is going to be a huge issue. There are some that are bred for not getting quite so tall, and specific colors, you know, I'm going to turn you loose at a garden center and say, go pick something out, because you really need to be focused on what your height and what your size requirements are for them.
Yeah,
a lot of questions. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Dwayne. Appreciate it. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she owns the business, The Garden Hoe, Concierge Horticultural Services. I'm Larry Mueller. KP Whaley, our on-air producer for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join us Sunday at 2 for the right to vote, from freed slaves and women's suffrage to today's debates over voter ID. We trace the wild history of the right to vote in America. That's the right to vote Sunday at 2 o'clock. Right now, on Garden Talk, we're visiting with Liz Freemuth. Great to have her back. It's always fun. And lots of callers online with questions. You may have a question. You can email us or post, if you got a photo of maybe something that you want to identify or what have you, you can go to our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show, and our email address at talk@wpr.org. And Jeannie in Menominee Falls has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jeannie. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, and thank you for all your wonderful information so far.
Oh,
I have a plumeria plant that is about 4 years old, and it sheds its leaves regularly in autumn, and then new leaves do come up. What I'm wondering is about fertilizing. I heard you speaking about fertilizing other plants during the winter, and I'm wondering if I should be fertilizing and watering this or just let it go dormant and then start fertilizing and watering in the spring.
Do you move this outside?
Yes.
Okay, and does it lose its leaves when you move it back in the house?
Yes.
And do you, when you move it back and forth in and out of the house, do you acclimate it slowly, or do you do like most of us and just pick it up and take it in the house?
Thing is so heavy, I move it once.
That's right.
You're
okay.
Move it once. That's it.
And when does it bloom for you?
It hasn't bloomed yet.
Okay. How long? And you've had it, what, 4 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it is now sending up new leaves.
Mm-hmm.
It must have a dozen new leaves on the two branches.
I would fertilize it. We're getting to the point where, you know, you have to be get a bit careful of fertilizing heavily over winter. But because it's lost its leaves, it's going to use a lot of energy re-sprouting its leaves. So you are going to want to fertilize it. Because it's a tropical plant, I think you're going to want to go for something that is actually listed for tropical plants. And then I would be a little careful after maybe one application. Now, you might want to do one maybe next month, but very lightly, and then see how it does, see how it develops and how it does. Have you had any problems with it over winter so far?
No.
Okay. So whatever you're doing, whatever you're currently doing, it's doing well. The reason why plants lose their leaves when we move them back and forth in and out of doors is because some plants, and you'll notice some lose them and some don't, some plants have got a better ability to stretch their cells out to capture more light in low light situations. And otherwise, what you'll notice is when they're in high light or really kind of good light situations for them, the cells may be thicker and a little bit smaller, whereas you put them in a lower light situation, which is putting them in the house, those cells need to stretch wide and thin out to capture as much light as possible. Some can do that very, very quickly. Others cannot. Those that cannot will drop their leaves and just go, all right, I'm making new ones, and they're going to do the right thing. So I wouldn't worry about it, but you might want to give it a little added dose of fertilizer. As long as the leaves don't spot, they don't have any discoloration around the edges, you're doing fine. I would check to see, I don't know off the top of my head when that blooms. You may want to put it into a slight bit of dormancy, so cut back the water once it gets going, and don't fertilize, and then maybe about a month to 6 weeks before it's supposed to flower, then you can pump up the water and the fertilizer again.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Dawn in Racine, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi.
What can I do for you?
I have two questions. The first one is, are you supposed to cut back hostas in the wintertime?
Hostas are one of those things in my yard that if I have time, I will cut them back, but they die off. As soon as we get a couple hard frosts, all you're going to be left with is some mushy leaves. You can generally just rake them up. If you let them go, it's not like a peony where you're going to get rot down into the stems that could potentially harm the roots. So if you don't cut them off, it's not going to hurt much of anything. Some people like to do it because it leaves a tidy look over winter. So if we don't have snow and you've got these icky looking leaves right next to the front door, that can be kind of unattractive. But you'll be fine either way.
Okay, I also have a Rose of Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
It's really full bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Off the bottom.
Okay, kind of lost you. So what I'm going to do is give you just basics on Rose of Sharon. Rose of Sharon blooms on old and new wood, so you can hack and whack on that to your heart's content. I would wait. Don't do it right now because we've got a warm stretch coming, and those things can sprout a bit if they haven't gone into full dormancy. So I would, with the rain we've had and the warm temps, I would not work away at those too much. Wait until the middle of winter and then trim back as much as you want. It will flower no matter what you do.
Yep, there we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. And speaking of plants sprouting, Cecilia emailed us with this concern. She says the garlic she planted a month ago has sprouted a stalk about 4 inches high. Is it going to survive the winter, or does she need to do anything special like mulching?
I'm not the best on growing garlic, so I will tell you what people have told me, and that's that if you're planting it late in the season, which is what we do here, oftentimes it's best to cover it with mulch right away. And I know that we have had situations where people planted garlic and we haven't done anything at all to them and they've been fine. But we've also had situations where it might be a little bit too wet early in the season and the tops will rot. So I would say right now I'm not that keen on putting mulch on stuff because the rodents have not gone to bed for the winter. And if you put mulch down, you're just creating a nice bed and breakfast for them for over winter. So, and garlic, they don't typically bother that much, but why give them a place to live? So I would wait until it freezes and then you can certainly mulch.
Jeff in Waupaca has a question or comment. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how's it going? I just had a question. I know you guys, I heard something last week about it and I didn't get a chance to call in. We're on our third year of a strawberry garden, and I love doing the strawberry gardens, but at the end of last year and this year, we had a real hard time with cucumbers, and now our tomatoes started dying off and peppers this year. But what I heard is we have a load of black walnuts in our yard. We have black walnut trees, like three of them, four of them, and the squirrels are burying the nuts everywhere. They just put them everywhere, and they're in the bales. Now, would that cause any problem?
Yeah, I know
black walnuts will kill plants off, but will that cause it if the squirrels are burying them?
Yeah, if they're
burying them in the straw.
Yep. And about the only thing you can do, I would suggest for next year, is replace your bales. Do you do your bales every year?
Yeah. I do every year, yeah.
So when you do that, I would say put chicken wire around the bales so that they can't bury the walnuts, the black walnuts, into the bales. One thing you do have to look at is where the drip line is of those trees. If they are dripping, if the rain as it falls is washing through those leaves and falling onto your bales, you can potentially have jug loan issues from that as well.
That's far enough away, but
okay.
The squirrels just bury them in all the floor. We have a floral shop for a backyard. We have a ton of flowers, and they bury them in all the pots and all the different things.
Oh, my gosh.
But we don't have any problem with any other plants dying off except for this year with the garden. And I was wondering, because we've had
so
great success with the straw bales, that all of a sudden this year here, it's like that. Cucumbers just all of a sudden, boom, just yellowed up. The vines, everything just, it's like I stopped watering them almost to what it looked like.
Yeah. Cover them and keep the darn squirrels out is about the best thing that you can do. You'll have to, you know, really, you'll have to keep on top of it. Otherwise, even a little bit of that can be a problem for those plants.
Especially tomatoes and
peas.
Those are the worst.
All they have to do is smell it, and they're gone. It's terrible. Absolutely terrible.
It's nuts. I mean, they just,
Yeah.
But I do try to take care of the squirrels. That I am trying.
Well, you take care of them, but let them take their walnuts elsewhere, right?
That's it, because it does end up being a mess at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Good luck with it next year.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Thanks for calling. And Alan Cashton, you are next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my questions. I have an orange tree that's 8 years old. My dad's growing it. And it don't fruit. No fruit has ever appeared on the tree, and it's about 6 feet tall.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's in a good window, so it's growing good, but there's no oranges, and my daddy always wanted to have an orange tree when he was young. He seen a lady that had an orange tree, and he thought that would be so great before he died. So.
Well, we'll keep fingers crossed. Let me ask you about fertilizing. Are you doing a lot of fertilizing or just kind of moderate or none at all?
I don't know exactly what he does, but he says he fertilizes some of it. But I need to have, I'm a dairy farmer and I'm farming. I'm not close to him now.
Okay.
Yeah. So I need to have some suggestions for that orange tree.
Yeah.
Do you know what type of an orange tree it is?
No, I don't know what kind
of thing. Okay. Most of them are going to be semi-dormant right now. And citrus trees are really interesting in that you can have a crop of fruit and blossoms at the same time.
Yeah.
They will do whatever they're going to do. Cutting them is often good for them, especially something that big. But it does take a long time. It does take some age in order for anything to fruit. And it might be, I don't know what cultivar it is, so it might be that this one in particular is taking just extra long to fruit and to flower. But I agree with your dad. There's nothing like the smell of citrus trees in blossom. Absolutely nothing. So I would say have him cut back on water a little bit at this point in time. Check the soil on that because it should be very, very well drained. It should be somewhat sandy. And also check the pH. You may have to start adding some citrus fertilizer to that or maybe even acidifying the water slightly. They don't like wet feet, so they need to be well drained. So don't let them, if he's got it sitting in a pan and waters right into that and it sits in the water, not good for it, that can actually throw blossoming off also.
And that special fertilizer for citrus.
And oftentimes our local garden centers are happy to order the stuff that we ask for. They just don't know we need it. So if he's got a local garden center, ask them if they would order it in for him, or you can order it online.
Yep, there we go.
I need to know some good websites for citrus and stuff. I got a couple lemon trees, too. They get the real big lemons.
Oh, probably the Myers.
P. I don't know what it is. It's P or something. But anyway, they like to have wet feet. But they like to have moisture, quite a bit of moisture with it.
They like moisture. None of them like wet feet, but they like to be consistently moist. And I always encourage people to let the top part of the soil dry off. You get less gnat issues that way, but it's also better for the plant. Citrus websites, let's see. I often use the universities in Arizona because it's big, and Florida. Yeah. You know, you're talking about citrus areas, but there are so many good websites out there. But I always go for the schools because I know they've done their research on it, or the citrus growers. Where I love to go and look for information and purchasing is a website called Edible Landscaping, and they're out of Virginia, and that gentleman has got the most unusual plants ever. In fact, one of mine from him on my list of I have to get this year is a coffee tree. And those are beautiful plants for indoors, and you can actually harvest enough to make yourself one pot of coffee for a dinner party. So, you know, it might take you 8 years, but you're going to be able to harvest it and roast your own beans. So how much better can it get?
But it's called Edible
Landscaping out of Virginia. I think it's Virginia, and I can't think of what the city is. But he ships stuff. And, you know, he's really good on his zone and what it takes to grow them. Also carries fertilizers and things like that. So, you know, and good culture sheets on all of the plants he's got.
Our producer, KP, is busily looking it up right now.
Oh,
is
he?
We'll have it up on our Facebook. We'll post that up on our Facebook page, KP, when you find
it. He's got so many interesting things that we should all be trying because they make great indoor plants.
Oh, thanks again, Al, for calling. Very much appreciate it. Thank you. Ron in Boston up next. Ron, hello. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. I've had powdery mildew in my melons and cucumbers and vine plants the last couple of years. This year I did use some, like, a copper-based spray. I probably got started too late with it, but, I mean, I got a decent crop, but is there anything I can do? I mean, I tried to buy resistant seed, and I really don't have the room to move it around. I would prefer to put them back, because what I did last year is I dug out like 2 by 3 foot areas, put about 12 inches of manure in, and then put the soil on top, and it really seemed to help warm the soil up. I was able to get the melons going earlier, and I was happy with that. I kind of like to put them back in the same place. I know they say it's better not to, but I guess I'm looking for suggestions.
It is better not to. Even if you can create mounds elsewhere and just move them around the garden a little bit so that you're mixing it up, because you will get problems that are going to stay in the soil over winter, whether that's insects or pathogens. And without moving that plant around and giving it a break, that same species, you're going to run into problems again and again. Having the manure underneath there, did you get fruit at all, or did the mildew, powdery mildew, take the plants out?
No. Actually, I got a pretty good crop.
Okay.
Probably only because when I started to see the first signs, why I got some. Like, it's a copper base.
Yeah. Well, and if you're waiting to see the signs, you've waited too long. So if you know you have an issue in your yard, then you need to start spraying right away, because once you've seen it, you've waited too long. It probably gave you a little bit of help, but if you would have started right at the beginning, which I know we don't really like to spray if we don't have to, but if you know you have an issue, start early, prevent, and you'll be much better off. If you can't move the stuff around, then you're really just stuck with being a little bit more proactive. I would say check how you water, because what we do culturally really makes a huge difference on how our plants are. So no top watering. Make sure that you've got airflow. So that might mean picking some leaves off so that you've got airflow coming through, and kind of monitoring what's around that area. Also, you might be able to thin some shrubs in your yard to increase the airflow. So it's not just what's going on with those particular plants, but what's going on in the entire environment that you can control. And that might help you out. If the manure warmed it up, go for it. You do have to watch how much nitrogen you're putting on before blossoms develop. But if you did fine this year, you're fine.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Deb in Menominee Falls, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
What can I do for you?
I am just wondering about the pruning prospects for probably a 3 to 5 year old viburnum, that snowball.
Mm-hmm.
type. And then also I have a two or three birdie butterfly bushes that are planted very close to each other, and they're kind of overgrown as well. So can I prune those, and how much can I prune them? And
yeah. How old are your plants? Are they long-standing, or are they recent additions to your yard?
No, they've been in at least, over 3 years. I think over 5 years.
And any kind of poor health indications on your viburnum? Did it look nice and healthy this year?
Yeah, it looks fine.
Okay.
It's just that it's so tall, it really needs to be cut back, and I'm always afraid to do that. I don't want to do it at the wrong time and then not get my blossoms the next year.
Exactly. And if this is one of the spring snowball, is that the kind you're talking about? Then don't prune it until after it blossoms. It has it has already set the blossoms for this upcoming spring.
So it does it on old wood then?
It does it right at... Big rule of thumb, and of course there's always exceptions, but if you prune something right after it flowers, you are most likely to not cut off next year's blossoms. There are always exceptions, but in general you can kind of go with that. Yes, it does flower on the older wood. And depending on which cultivar you have, I'm not sure that one doesn't flower on some new wood, but you've got a nice shrub. Don't mess with it until after it flowers, and then you can take some out. And the key things to look at are, take out anything that's crossing. You want a nicely formed shrub, and what you're looking for are the branches to be growing from the center out, not from the outside toward the center. So after it blossoms, and you can really look at that over winter when there's no leaves on it, which gives us a really good look at what's going on, and kind of mentally mark which ones do you want to take out, which ones are not the most desirable. And you can even mark them with a little bit of, use twisty ties or something to remind yourself, or, that nice plastic tape that has no sticky on it, the flagging tape, that works well. And that way, when it's in flower, you're not going to lose the branches that you had thought about all winter. Then really take out those that are going towards the center, crossing, dead, things that are diseased, etc. And by the time you work through that, you probably will have a majority of your pruning done. And from there, you can do aesthetically. Just take a step back. And in my world, in my yard, my own yard, not my clients' yards, but in my yard, I take a beverage of choice, and what depends on the time of the day. And you really want to take your time with it if you're pruning for structure, so that you can take a step back, walk around it, and especially if it's close to the house or in a prominent spot where your mistakes will show a little bit more, that you want to take your time and just say, that one looks like it needs to go away. And my rule is, if I'm cutting off two branches on one larger branch, it's probably time for the big branch to go. And they will be forgiving. If they're healthy, they'll be very forgiving. So you can be bold, but do it cautiously just to make yourself happy.
And thank you very much for calling.
Butterfly bush. We forgot
butterfly
about
bush.
That.
Okay.
Butterfly bush, I don't trim until spring.
Okay.
I wait to see what's going to come out, because some of them, and depending on the spot we have them in, you'll get growth above the crown area. In other areas, you don't get anything except from the crown up. So I wait to see in spring what's going to happen with those.
Good luck, Deb, and thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, visiting today with Liz Freemuth, who owns her concierge horticultural service, The Garden Hoe. Are you online? You're online, Liz.
I am, yeah.
Yeah, we've got...
In theory. Yeah, I've got a website. I think it's listed.
I think we've got a link on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And you really do... I'm sure you have many customers here in Wisconsin, but you are...
I'm all over. Yeah, I'm all over. I go south. And a lot of that is because my clients have taken me with them. I've had them up here and they take me elsewhere to help them out at their other places. So it works out really well. I can't say that I complain horribly about going to Florida in February. That's not a bad thing to go play with plants way down south in February.
Oh, yeah. And you've been in California, Indiana, you're all over the place.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. And then my friend slash client are Alan Armitage in Georgia, who's just a blast. He and I work on his yard, and it's always fun. His wife does videos of it, and I hope to God they never come out. I hope.
Oh, that's a fun. Norman in Wausau has a question, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Norman.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a problem with my Athena muskmelon and some other varieties as well, and that is they get nice and big, in other words, full size. Probably the Athena was weighing 5 or 6 pounds by early August. But then they just sit there and sit there until finally they rot. Seems to be the problem?
You need to try a different melon. I've actually had that problem with the Athena as well, and we just don't have a long enough growing season for it. And I hear what you're saying. They get big. They should ripen. But they don't. They just don't. And I've tried. I don't have a good cultivar for you to try. I'll be really honest with you about that. I've even tried some of the smaller pocket-sized melons, thinking, you know, maybe that would do it because they've got a shorter growth season. And I've not been happy with those either. So my mother used to do beautiful muskmelons when we were growing up, and I have no idea which cultivar she used for that, but they were absolutely gorgeous. And I think it's just playing around with finding one that's going to work for your site. Go with something that's a little bit shorter growth and see what happens. I don't have anything else to tell you.
Your mom would have been growing, you know, this would be back a few years now.
Oh, golly, yeah. This would be like probably 40 years ago, 50 years ago.
So maybe the Seed Savers Exchange would be a place to look.
I always look at Seed Savers, and they have got some absolutely gorgeous stuff. Baker Seeds is another one that's got wonderful heirlooms. Where are you from? Wausau?
Yeah.
Central Wisconsin.
Yeah. Are you online or not?
Yes.
I would check Seed Savers. Check out Baker Heirloom Seeds. High Mowing is another good one. And you might, Seed Savers will have something out there for you, I would hope. Otherwise, I know in town, the company that, you know, you can find good Seed Saver seeds around. I know even starting them inside, it's like you said, you get them out. Even if you get your plants an early start, they just don't do much. They sit.
I did find one thing on the sweet potatoes. Everybody says you have a hard time growing them. Mm-hmm. But if you take the little rooted leaves in the fall when you dig your sweet potatoes out and put those in a pot, you can have them as an ornamental through the winter and then put them out in the spring. This year I got some hills that I had over 10 pounds of sweet potatoes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
That's fantastic.
It was over 4 pounds.
That's a fantastic tip, and I think people are going to be going out looking at their sweet potato vines a little bit differently. I know I harvest mine out of the ornamentals, and you know, they're not very big when you're growing them in a pot with a bunch of other stuff, but that's a fantastic idea. Get them started and put them out in the spring. Good idea.
Thank you.
I love it.
Thank you. I love sweet potatoes anyway.
I do too.
I love them.
And, you know, the different colored leaves will give you different sweet potatoes. So, you know, the ones we get in the store are typically just the orange ones, but there's yellows, there's whites, there's all different ones that have got different flavors to them. The white flesh sweet potatoes are actually sweeter, I think, than the orange ones. So
they
really,
are.
Yeah, really. To me, they taste sweeter. It's a different texture as well.
And what are they again?
They're sweet potatoes, but they actually have white flesh on them. And so you have to go to some place that actually carries more than your typical orange sweet potato. And a specialty grocery store will have a little bit different variety to choose from.
Mm. Thanks again, Norman. Appreciate it.
Great tip.
Marcia in Grafton, your turn. Hi, Marcia.
Hi. Thank you. I have a question about clematis. Can you cut them down to the ground level, and will they regenerate?
Depends on which clematis it is as to how successful you are in doing that. Do you know which cultivar you have?
Oh, I don't. It's a beautiful blue flower on it. Mm. And what happened was last year my neighbor killed her grass with weed killer, and it's right along the same fence line, and she nearly killed the clematis.
Mm.
And they came back, but they're really sick looking.
Okay. What I would suggest is, because there's different types of clematis, and that will determine how you're going to prune it and how you're going to treat it.
Uh-huh.
Song Sparrow Farm has got a wonderful website, and love them. It's owned by Roy Clem, who is a multi-generational peony breeder and plant guru. He has got some of the most fabulous stuff ever. But he also has a wonderful website that you can, you know, sorry, Roy, that you can go and use for research. So I would go through their online catalog, go through the clematis, and see if you can line up something that is going to be similar by picture with what they've got.
Okay.
And on each one of those, they're going to list which type it is. And then they also, on that same website, will give you the care for each specific type. So that way you can kind of identify by picture what it is and then get the culture recommendations for it.
Okay, and how about a fertilizer? That would that help?
You know, it might, but I think you need to get it healthy before you start really popping growth on it.
Okay.
You know, that to me is my gut reaction. On the other hand, oftentimes if you spur growth, you actually can encourage a plant to work around damage. Weed killer can actually really create problems for a few years. And what happens is it gets into the cell system of the plant. So even if it doesn't kill it outright, it actually may have done some cellular damage inside. And as those things do, as the cells kind of pop, you may see a little bit more death going on. So, you know, if you might get it to grow a little faster and maybe withstand what's going on internally if there is any residual. So, you know, I wouldn't do it now. Do something.
Yeah.
You can do a slow release so that it's available in the spring, but I wouldn't do anything fast release right now.
Okay. And what's the name of the site again? It's
Song Sparrow Farm and Nursery.
Okay.
And it's Roy Clem. It's K-L-E-H-M. He is fabulous. Their place is just south of here, outside of Janesville, in a little town called Avalon. And he is a multi-generational peony breeder known the world over for his work. He is fabulous, absolutely fabulous.
Huh? There we go. Thanks, Marcia, for calling. And let's give Betty a chance. Hi, Betty in Hartford.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two clematises that are quite large. In fact, one of them is really pretty old. I think it might be as old as 12 years old, and I received it as a gift. I've nursed these plants along, especially the 12-year-old one, for many, many years. And I found that putting it outdoors in the summer is always wonderful for it. I keep it in a place where it gets only the nice morning sun on the deck, and, you know, it gets plenty of humidity, and it always blooms beautifully, and it does well.
Tropical hibiscus?
Oh, gosh. I think it's a tropical hibiscus.
Does it have really huge blooms on it?
Yes, it's got
paper-looking
blooms.
Paper-looking?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Tropical
Both
hibiscus.
Of them do.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them do. One of them has a purple fuchsia flower, and the other one is yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, I have to admit, I didn't give it quite as good care this year. I was gone a lot during the summer. So I have brought them in, and I have found that very often what I would do when I would bring them in the winter, for the winter months, is that I give them a shower and then kind of spray them with a fungicide. Well, this year they seem to not be doing well at all.
Mm.
The one with the purplish flowers, first of all, has developed kind of a white crust on the top of the soil on the pot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one doesn't have that, but it's the main root, the wood of the plant, is real, oh, I don't know, it looks like it's tough. It's okay. Gotten very tough. So now then, on both plants, too, they're getting like a brown curling. And I know that hibiscus mm-hmm. will really react if you overwater them. I discovered that by error.
I would say, first off, what you need to do is take those back in the shower. And really shower them off good. That white crust on the top is more than likely salts that have not washed through. So you need to really, really rinse the soil through very, very well. And it may actually be residual. I don't know if that happened after you did the fungicide or not. But rinsing that, and the salts will rinse through. So you just need to really, really, really heavily water that through until you don't see that anymore. And then I would check on the underside of the leaves and check on the stems to see that you don't have scale or aphids or something like that that came in on those plants, because it may actually be that you're dealing with an insect issue and not a fungal issue. And so you'd get out the magnifying glass and take a look at those. And oftentimes those are really, scale is a little bit tougher to treat, but you can use a systemic on that. There are plenty of systemics on a non-edible that are absolutely great for scale. Otherwise, if you can catch them in the crawler stage, just using a horticultural oil appropriate for that plant will actually take care of it. It's that same thing with the aphids, that if it's got aphids, those are soft body critters, you can treat them with horticultural oil, and that should take care of them. Might take a couple of treatments, and that you can do in the bathtub as well. And I'm not worried too much about the stalkiness of the stem. If it's a stem, if it's a root, you can actually do a little root pruning on those things, and they'll be fine. You know, repotting them once you bring them in is not necessarily a bad idea. Pull them out, cut off the old roots, and pop them into some nice new soil, and let them go.
And there you go.
Yeah.
Mentioning magnifying glass, mm-hmm. I purchased one here a couple of weeks ago.
Just one? I have at least three, and I need them more and more.
Oh, my goodness me. It's proven to be quite better. I've used it many times already. I've gotten my $5 worth out of it.
And then now go for a jeweler's loop of 10 times. You'd be amazed at what you see.
Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she provides horticultural services, concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. With us on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mealer with Liz Freemuth, who provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. And it's great to have her along. You may have a question. I think there's one open line at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. Teresa from Ironwood has a question. Hi, Teresa. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks. I have a trumpet vine, 8 to 10 years old, that never bloomed. So I'm thinking now, does it bloom on new wood or old wood?
You know, off the top of my head, I don't know if that blooms on old or new wood, but I've had the same problem, and I've tried both ways. I love trumpet vine. Supposed to be horribly invasive. I can't get it to bloom, and I can't get it to grow in my own yard. We always had a beautiful orange one that never, when I was growing up, that never got any trimming at all, period, on it. And so I'd have to check for you. I honestly am going to claim ignorance on this one. I honestly don't know whether it's old or new wood. But it, typically, when you see them, they're flowering low, they're flowering high. So it's not just on the terminal ends, and it's not just on the new growth. So It might be that it does on both of them. Mine is now 12 years old, and I still have yet to see a bloom on it.
Oh.
And I don't recall anyone else ever having a problem. And in fact, my mother, so you and I might be the only ones in the world who cannot get a trumpet vine to do what it should do. Do you know if yours is an orange or a yellow?
It's an orange, I think. It's a Madam Gallon.
Okay. And I don't think with these, you know, that you have to have more than one. I think that they should just flower fine on their own. Do you have it in sun or shade?
It's mostly sun.
Okay. Yeah, I got nothing for you. I'm sorry. I am so totally useless for you. I apologize completely. Yeah, I have tried everything. I've tried fertilizing. I've tried not fertilizing. I've tried planting in the shade. I've tried planting in the sun. Mine's yellow, and I cannot get it to flower. So maybe one of your great listeners, Larry, will have an answer for us out there, because I'm drawing a blank on this one.
So stay listening, Teresa.
Sorry, Teresa.
Thanks for calling. Sherry in McHenry, Illinois, I bet, has a question for you. Hi, Sherry.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
About 4 years ago, we took out a 30-year-old tree, and I apologize that I don't know the name of the tree, but it has golden leaves, small golden leaves that drop in the fall, and it was a messy tree.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the stump was properly ground, and since that tree was removed, we continue to have sprouts in our yard that have invaded as far as my neighbor's yard, mm-hmm. I assume along the root track.
That would be my guess, yep.
We can't get rid of these little shoots, and yep. They're a mess in the yard.
What are you doing so far to try and get rid of them?
Pulling them, mowing them. I've actually put weed killer on it.
Yeah. So you're doing everything that you can until those, and honestly, if they're sending sprouts up, I don't know that anything you're doing would change to get an end result, other than when you do the weed killer. And I know this might sound like a big pain in the butt, but you might do a two-man process, and that's go through on those sprouts, cut it off close to the ground. Then take a paintbrush in your weed killer. Don't spray it, but take a paintbrush. And I find the foam ones work really good for this. You paint the top of that sprout, even if it's little, and then paint around that edge right underneath it on the trunk. And do it very heavily, and that will suck some of that poison in to the ground. Best time to do that stuff with anything you're trying to control with weed killer is after a good couple of hard frosts. So, you know, you're looking at, if you start to see some sprouts coming up now, it'd be a good time to cut those back, paint them, and what happens is that weed killer will get into the roots much quicker at this time of the year. And so you might try that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you're doing what you should do to get rid of it, and until those roots actually die out, and if you're seeing them, the sprouts actually go further away from where that tree was, you might really be getting to the end of what it's going to do. It might continue to die out. So,
That's encouraging.
Yeah. So, I mean,
just keep at it.
Keep at it is right. And pulling, don't pull though. I would not pull, because wherever you pull on something that's sprouting that much, you're just creating a new growth point. So I would cut it off and paint it. And this is one good use for weed killer.
Do you recommend a particular product in terms of weed killer?
No, it depends on what you've tried so far. Brush killer actually might work a little bit better for you than like a standard Roundup, because you're dealing with woodier stems. But just use the concentrate and just dip it with a paintbrush and use it that way.
Okay. Appreciate your information.
Good luck.
Enjoyed your show.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sherry. Joe in Hartford, what is on your mind?
Yes. Is it better to cover rose bushes with straw or pine needles, or is it better to cover them with a cone?
You mean like
several different varieties?
Like the foam cones?
Yes.
Have you done that in the past?
Yes.
With success?
I don't remember.
Okay. Well, the reason why I ask is, if you're familiar with working with cones, then some people can actually do that very, very well. Otherwise, what happens if we're not completely attentive to the cone is that it will actually heat up like a greenhouse and will prematurely sprout some growth on those roses. The best thing really to do for hardy roses, hardy for this area, is, you know, you want to protect any graft union that you've got. And so you wait until the ground freezes solid, and then you mound up with some compost or your mulch or something like that. Oftentimes dirt or compost works best because that's going to give you the best coverage for frost. And you're waiting until the ground freezes solid again, like we had talked about earlier, so that you're not providing bed and breakfast for rodents. And they will really like the rose tissue. If you do cones, if that's something you've got your heart set on doing.
I don't think we'll do cones again. Are pine needles okay?
Pine needles are great. Absolutely. There's no reason why you can't use it. Oftentimes I hear people say, well, they're too acidic. No, pine needles are not too acidic for much of anything. And with as high as our pH is in this state, that you really would only benefit from a little acidity anyway. But no, you can definitely use that. But I would, again, wait until the ground freezes solid to do that. And then mulch over that graft union.
How many inches?
Mm-hmm.
Over the graft union. So you might end up with quite a big mound, depending on where that graft union is. And that's going to be the knobby part. And so you want to get, if you don't have something that's got a graft union, if it's an own root, you want to go up high enough so that you're protecting probably about 6 to 8 inches of it. A lot of the stuff that's hardy for this area, you don't have to do a thing to, but if you really love them and you want to protect them, mounding it up, you know, a good 8 inches would not be a bad thing.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks so much. Abby has a question for you on email. She just fenced in her yard this past spring with sheep fencing and would like to find some sort of ivy or climbing plant that would grow on the mesh wire fencing. She has very sandy soil. When you dig down 6 inches, it looks like a sandbox, and 80-foot pines in the yard, so it's pretty shaded. Any recommendations there?
Boy, that's kind of a tall order, but I would almost take a look at Virginia creeper, which most people consider a weed, but mm-hmm. it does cover. And I don't know that you're going to get an ivy to cover, and a lot of things are going to actually pull too heavily. Grapes will actually pull a little bit too heavily on that sheep fencing, and you may have to play around with that Virginia creeper a little bit also. Now, the only thing you're going to find is deciduous that's going to live around there. So I would suggest that you take a look at Virginia creeper.
All right. Let's go to Bill in Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. I've got a passion fruit vine that I've been overwintering in the basement for a number of years, mm-hmm. and usually trim it back pretty severely before I bring it downstairs. This year, I learned that I could pollinate the flowers a bit late in the season, and I have several fruit on there.
Lovely.
It seems, from my reading, I believe that the fruit will not fully ripen unless they remain on the vine.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm just wondering, if I trim off everything except for the vines that have fruit, do you think they might continue to ripen in the basement?
Do you have to trim off everything right now, or can you wait until the fruit ripens?
Because I can wait a while before I do some trimming. I just need to probably put a cage around it to catch all the leaves.
Gotcha. I would say I would wait, because every bit of food that you can possibly get for that fruit is going to be necessary to get it to ripen. So you want to have enough leaf. You know, it will get nutrients through vines, but, you know, having that leaf for photosynthesis is going to make a big difference for you. And I honestly don't know how long it's going to take for that passion fruit to ripen for you.
It's about 3 months.
Is it? And when did you develop the...
Well, they seem to have about a month to go.
Okay, so you may actually have to supplement them with some growing light. And I would, you know, one of the most beautiful things, I say this somewhat tongue-in-cheek, one of the most beautiful things to come out of the burgeoning marijuana industry in the western part of the country is that growing lights are so much easier to find online that it's amazing what you can get for a relatively low price. And so I would almost invest in a good growing light, you know, something that's going to give you red and blue spectrum, and get some extra light on that plant. Because, you know, to me, I would consider this a challenge. It's like, wow, now you gotta have the fruit. Yeah. So I don't think you're going to get enough light inside to actually develop that fruit. So get a growing light and give it a couple of months. What the heck, right?
Why not?
Yeah, I think that would be absolutely fantastic. They're probably going to be smaller than what you could get in a specialty grocery store.
Yes,
so
they are.
Yeah, so keep that in mind.
Good luck.
Once they're ripe, shoot a photo and
absolutely,
and send it to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I really want to see those fruit. That's great. Irene in Delafield, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for your show, Larry. We purchased a brown turkey fig this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's potted. And it grew really nice over the summer. Bought it in 3 weeks ago, and one by one the leaves fell off. It's mm-hmm. in a real bright light room. I'd say it's a sunroom.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
Yeah, it will be all right. It will develop more leaves on it. If it's gone into too much of a dormancy period, you may actually see it kind of fade out a little bit because they're not typically evergreen. Even, you know, like you go to California, they drop their leaves and the leaves will reemerge in, about February or so. So you're really looking at something that potentially you might have to just let go dormant for a bit, but I don't expect that it's going to die. If you've got a cool, darker place to put it in until about February or so, that might be a good idea, and just keep it moist, slightly moist, maybe once a month, once every 3 weeks. Check it to make sure it's not drying out horribly. If you want to actually spur it to develop more leaves now, you may stress that out a little bit too much.
Yeah.
And with figs, if you try and keep them going for a longer period than what we have up here, you may develop two time periods of fruit, and the first one is not generally the one that tastes the best. The second one is actually the one that tastes the best. So so if you do get some fruit, if you decide to kind of keep it going, then don't be disappointed if the fruit doesn't taste great. So just let it go.
Is the basement okay?
Basement should be fine.
Okay.
You just don't want it to be too wet. And if you start to see some leaves develop that are getting a little bit leggy, you may actually want to cut the water back a little bit or decide to bring it in full light and see what happens with
okay.
it. But the brown turkey should actually be winter hardy.
Okay.
For us. So next year you might want to think about planting it in a semi-protected site outside, and then once it freezes back, you know, it'll grow from the roots every year. You won't keep that above ground tissue, but it should develop, and it should develop fruit for you.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Irene, for calling. And Jackie in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning. Glad you're here. I foolishly was tempted into buying a container of Venus flytrap at one of the stores.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Not in any of my garden books to tell me anything about it.
No, I really can't. I know absolutely nothing about Venus flytrap. But what I would suggest to you is to possibly call them at the domes and ask them about, because you're in Milwaukee, either that or take your little Venus flytrap over there and ask them what you should do about it, because I do believe that they have those. Otherwise, I would contact Olbrich, too, because I believe that they have got a display of those at their garden in Madison also, and they would be better equipped to help you with what do you do now.
Yeah, Olbrich Botanical Gardens. Mm-hmm. Or the Domes is a great idea.
The Domes is close for you. I would hit them up because I'm pretty sure that they still have them there.
Oh, that's a good idea. The only place I could find something was in a 30-year-old dictionary.
And it gave you a definition, which you could see, right? That's it.
Well, it said they grow to be a foot tall, and they're from down south. and this little container has got about 50 of them in there.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you need help. You need help. I would hit them up at the domes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks, Jackie. Appreciate the call. Oh, boy. Patty in New London. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. Sure. So I have two questions. Mm-hmm. I have raspberries that we planted maybe three years ago, and they're kind of getting out of hand a little bit. And then right next to that, about the same, maybe a year earlier, we planted asparagus. So my question is, how do I trim back or keep those raspberries manageable? Right now, they're bearing plenty of fruit in the spring and then again in the fall, mm-hmm. But the stalks are so tall that the weight of the berries actually are laying on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the other question is the asparagus is right next to there, and the raspberries are just going to take it over. So I think I should move the asparagus to a different location completely, but I don't know how to do that or when.
That I actually would wait until, oh boy, asparagus. I think, you know, really we talk about spring for doing asparagus, but let's go back to the raspberries first. Are you happy with the growth of the stems that you've got? Is it just the weight and that's bothering you about how they're developing?
Yeah, the growth of the plant themselves is doing fine.
Okay. Are they spreading outward too far?
Yes, they will be.
Okay, and if you're happy with the amount that you planted in the area that you planted, you can actually just cut off those canes that are going where you don't want them to go. You don't have to let them run wild. This is your yard. You can do what you need to do to keep them under control. As far as the height and them bending over under the weight of the fruit, what has been recommended to me a number of times is that when you're looking at raspberries, you can take off about the top 25% of that cane and only lose about 10% of the fruit. And if you take off that top 25%, you're not going to have that bent over weight issue that you would have had had you left that. And so you really can better manage those plants and how they're hanging over by just lopping off 25% as they start to flower and develop. And that should give you a little bit more control over how those are really kind of managed in your yard. The asparagus, unless you actually want and feel the physical need to move your asparagus, I'm not one that says dig up a bed.
No.
You know, 3 years, you're just starting to get it to develop some nice stalks for you. So I think I would hold off and try and manage the raspberries better and get those to go the other way rather than towards your asparagus. But if you're really dying to do it, then you dig your beds in the spring, you dig your trenches, and, you know, you can move your stuff, but you're going to sacrifice about 4 years of asparagus again.
Okay, yeah. Well, we haven't even cut it to eat it yet. We've just been letting it grow, so.
Yeah, so are you dying that you have to move it?
No, not necessarily. I just thought that the raspberries might take it over eventually.
It's just tough to move because it takes so long.
It is. It takes so long. It's just one of those. I mean, I can almost feel my shoulders slump when I think, do I have to move asparagus? It's like, oh, no, don't do that. So I would say manage the raspberries better. Get them pushed the other way and leave the asparagus alone.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
All right.
And that makes it easier too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And if I was going to move, I'd be thinking about eliminating those asparagus and putting in some new.
I would too.
All male.
I agree with you. Yeah, yeah.
So there you go. Sue, thanks again for calling, Patty. Sue in Fish Creek, you have a quick question for us.
I do. Hi, how are you both doing?
Good.
Wonderful. You?
Good. Good. Okay. We bought a home that was beautifully planted, and I am not a gardener. So I am trying to put this garden to bed for the winter. I have hydrangea plants with the dried leaves and the dried clumps of flowers, and I don't know if I cut those down.
Are they the round heads or the ones that are shaped somewhat triangularly, cone-shaped?
They're round.
Okay. Depending on which one it is, you can either cut them back now and suffer, or you can cut them back later and suffer less. So that one would be up to you. Because without knowing which cultivar it is, some of them will bloom on new wood, some of them will not. And so typically what I will tell people to do is wait until spring. If you want to take those flower heads off, go ahead and trim those off right underneath there, but it's not going to hurt anything to leave them go. Then in spring, as those leaves develop, then cut off the dead stuff down to where you're seeing those buds expand. And that actually will give you flowers next year. If you cut it off too short and it's one that doesn't like it, you won't have flowers for a couple of years.
Liz, thank you, Sue. And Liz, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Liz Freemuth, who owns her concierge service, The Garden Hoe. And we have a link to her website on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Jeff Epping from Olbrich Gardens joins us next week on Friday to answer your garden questions.